Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And as you know by now, every experience has within it the seeds of a love letter to someone. And I remember, and I love you, welcome into my life, thank you. It's about gratitude, and it's about sharing memories. Today's guest is someone who has been here twice before, Jane Bragg. And Jane is actually one of the best storytellers I know. So I could not resist asking her to come back when she happened to tell me at coffee one day the most astounding family story. And I just wanted her to share it. And let's see what love letter evolves out of this one. Jane, I'm going to go to you. And I know you're going to talk about your grandfather's, anyway, it started off with a store in San Francisco that you liked in an urn. Can you just start there?
Sure.
And just tell it?
Okay, be happy to. Before I start, I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself.
Please.
That I saw a great line on the back of a car, where many great lines come from.
Yeah.
And it is, I may wander, but I'm not lost.
Okay.
And that's how I talk. I wander, but I know where I'm going.
Good.
So hang in if
okay.
you want to.
Yes.
And also, I love to tell stories because I'm a storyteller for children at the Asian
yes.
Art Museum.
Yes.
Remember, we
And
talked.
I know, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I can see why you are a professional storyteller.
But I would love to someday tell a story on Love Letters Live that I tell children, which would be
oh,
a love story.
perfect. Next time.
Okay.
Let's do your grandfather's urn first. And
okay.
How did you come to
okay.
recognize this in the store that you like?
Okay. Well, here it is. My grandparents, Basha was my grandmother's name. We called her Bessie. That was what everybody called her in English, Bessie.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather's name was Joseph Lucas -Shevsky.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came to the United States, some of the family, other relatives, took the name Shevsky and shortened it to Schaff. And that's the Pennsylvania contingent.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Brooklyn contingent is Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
But their passport was Lucas-Shevsky. So my mother's maiden name was Rose Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, my brother's name is Lucas. And his son is named Lucas Jr.
They're using Lucas as a first name?
Yes.
Ah,
yeah. Isn't that
okay.
nice?
Yes.
So named after my grandfather. He was Lucas, and then Joseph is my brother's middle name. See, the reason why in Jewish tradition we name our children after somebody who's deceased.
Mm-hmm.
So when my brother was born, see, I'm going to wander, but I'll be back.
Please do it. I'm right
when
with
my
you.
Brother was born, he was named after my grandfather. His name was Joseph Lucas Bragg. Now, my father at the time said, no son of mine is going to be called Joe. So he became Lucas.
Oh.
And as a little boy, he couldn't say Lucas, so he could say Yuka. So he was Yuka boy. But getting back to
yes.
grandfather.
Names are so interesting. There's a
Are they
whole journey.
Fancy?
Yes, a
yeah.
whole journey.
It's a whole
names.
Journey in
mm-hmm.
name. And I'm named after actually a Quaker friend of my mother's, Jane. Nice. So here we go. My grandparents came from Russia, from the Ukraine, which would be Kiev and Odessa today, but now it's called the Ukraine. It was
mm-hmm.
back then, Kiev. And they came with their bags and their bundles, and among which, now this, they had to have traveled by boat, of course. They had to have come probably in a better class on the boat because they had a lot of things that they carried. And this samovar, is the urn we're talking about.
Okay.
A samovar is a Russian tea
oh,
urn.
You're saying just by virtue of the fact that they had
slept,
so much to carry,
right,
they were allowed more space. So
right,
they
right. Because this was a cumbersome thing to carry. Alone today, it would take up a
but
good
did,
size.
But did you, maybe you don't know this, but did they leave with any kind of money or any
I
kind
don't
of
know
that they could take care of themselves?
Well, they did. They uh-huh. opened up a grocery store.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead.
And they were upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And they...
In the Ukraine or when
no,
they got here?
No, there and here.
Uh-huh.
But they were definitely upper middle class here. Mm-hmm. They owned their own home. They had a brownstone.
Oh, my God. And what year was this?
This would have been around 1912.
My goodness. Okay. That's...
I don't think they started out so hot. When they... Who knows? But in time,
yes,
they did
I
have
see.
The brownstone.
Okay.
And
so what they couldn't bring in money, they brought in brains.
Yeah, and courage.
Yes.
A
yes,
great deal of courage. Because my grandfather, now here's the story. My grandfather was very tall. And he was a guard to the Tsar of Russia. But I did some more investigating. To be a guard to the Tsar of Russia, you also had to have great connections. It's kind of like a samurai in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Good connections and money. So I don't know if my grandparents there had a lot of money in Russia. But what had happened was the samovar, which is now in my brother's possession, has on it the seal of the Tsar of Russia and some language on it. Apparently, it's an honorarium given to my grandfather from the Tsar of Russia.
Oh, the samovar itself was
yes.
the...
Yes, because it has all these seals mm-hmm. and stamps on it. That's not unusual. There are. I looked up samovars with seals on them, and they're called imperial samovars.
But wait a minute, how did you come to know all this?
My brother took it to a Russian embassy in Washington, D.C.,
okay.
where he lives. And they...
He has the samovar.
Yes,
brother.
My brother
okay,
has the
so samovar. You'll get to that, I'm sure.
Yeah,
okay.
I just did. Anyway, he's got the samovar. He's got the samovar. I was curious, and this is why. I have this wonderful job that starts about 7 o'clock every morning at a fabulous place called Leftovers. It's a consignment shop of the most wonderful, loved pieces of furniture, some bric-a-brac, mostly furniture, lamps, accessories, beautiful things. When people love things, they carry with them, I believe, something, mm-hmm. some energy. It's mm-hmm. Everything mm-hmm. Einstein said, everything is energy. Mm-hmm. It's all energy. So here we have energy. And so I love coming in every morning. But what do I do there at 7 o'clock in the morning other than sweep the sidewalk? I take care of the menagerie. And the menagerie, there are 4 cats and 5 doves. And the doves live in a beautiful antique cage, gorgeous cage. And it's a very, very large room with a huge barn siding, picnic table, and benches. And it's their kitchen. And it's wonderful to be there in the morning and to be greeted by the doves. And the doves have...
I wish people could see the smile on your face because you're absorbing and giving the energy as you talk about them.
But they talk. And I didn't know that... Well, they coo. We know that they coo like pigeons. But they say things like, dag-nabbit, dag-nabbit.
Truly.
Truly, dag-nabbit. And they'll go, yes, yes. And then they'll go, ha-ha. And I talk back to them, and they talk back to me. This goes on in the morning. I have so much fun with the doves. The cats are all rescues. So there's Birdie, who has 3 legs. I nicknamed him Tripod. And he's the oldest cat there, and he rules the roost. And then, of course, there's Oliver, and we have a deaf cat named Wally, who's very affectionate and very sweet. And then there's Sylvester, who's one of my favorites. He's a black cat with little white toes. I'm wandering away.
That's
here.
All right.
We
I
got
like
from
this.
Russia and the Samovar, but there is a point.
I'm sure there is.
So one day, I notice a pair of lamps. They're not quite samovars because there is no spout. And a samovar is in itself a tea urn.
Mm-hmm.
You burn like a coal or some fuel of some sort. It fires up the water and you steep the tea in this huge urn.
So it comes out tea. It
yes,
doesn't come out
yes,
water.
Uh-huh. Yes, it comes out tea. So and Russians, of course, love tea. And so tea is, and it's a communal urn. It's because these large families get together and you have your tea and you don't drink it out of a teacup. You actually, in the old fashioned way, you drank it out of a glass.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you would take a cube of sugar, put it in your mouth and suck the tea through.
Oh, I've seen that in old
Russia. Through your teeth.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Not good for the tea.
No, straight to the dentist's office.
Right,
after,
right.
Uh-huh.
So I see these urns, and they're made out of brass, and they have these beautiful black shades, very, very pretty urns.
What does that mean, beautiful black shades?
Shade. It's a lamp. These urns...
I see. Once they're made into lamps.
I got to tell you, when my mother had this samovar, because it went from her family to her, that was one of her things.
Mm-hmm.
So she had this samovar. It was brass, and she covered it. She had it... Oh, my God. She had it silver-plated. And she had a lamp made out of it. But that was, people did that. Because the samovars, after a while, were not in use.
Right.
on the internet, you could just look up samovars, and you could just start to go from place to place to place until you're in another world of samovars. It's wonderful.
And there are I have a question, though. Silver plating, it means that the Antiques Roadshow people were just laughing out of town?
Out.
Okay, isn't that too bad? Yes.
And that would have to be brought back to its original finish. The most expensive ones, I believe, were made of copper and brass. Those were the highest end. And this could have been that, but she didn't like cleaning the brass all the time. So what happened was you plate it with a dull silver finish, and it's okay. The seal is still on it, of course, all that good stuff. So I see these samovar looking lamps, and I'm very...
at the store.
Yeah, and I'm very attracted to them. So I sent some pictures to my brother. And we start talking samovar. And then we start talking grandfather. Then I start talking guard to the, you know, guard to the Tsar of Russia, the Crimean horse guards. He also could have been, if he was not a guard, the honorarium would have come because he was a horseman and he was a trainer of horses. They had this huge academy in Russia for the horse guards. He could have been a teacher trainer.
And this is something that Jews were allowed to do?
Not really. I think he got in because of his talent, his ability, and his height. Grandfather was over 6 feet tall, and that was quite unusual for that day, let alone within the Jewish community. But then, as a horseman, Jews were not generally horsemen. But what's interesting, if there is a gene, and if anybody knows this, for horseback riding, catch this. My mother...
Yeah.
At a very young age, was the youngest girl in Brooklyn to get her driver's license. Now we're talking the 1920s here. She was then with the Ipana toothpaste model. There was a toothpaste called Ipana.
Oh, I remember it.
And this girl had a lot of white teeth. Well, Ford Motor Company, Ford Motor Company hooked up with my mother, this Ipana toothpaste girl. And paid.
Wait, so your mother was the Ipana too?
No.
The Ipana.
And the youngest girl to get a driver's license in Brooklyn.
Yes, okay.
Then there's the Ipana toothpaste girl gets involved in this. Ford Motor Company gets involved in this. There's a whole.
I can see why you're wondering. How could you not?
A publicity thing to go from Brooklyn across the United States to California. Now, my mother's a young girl. Very, very pretty, quite lovely, and very charming, and very smart. Now she's driving across country, and there are pictures that I have of my mother in Yosemite Park.
What year?
And, oh, my gosh, I don't know what year. I'll have to look it up.
Okay. But early 1900s.
And then early 1900s, so the flapper times and all that. So whatever Ford Motor Company came out, and cross country was a big deal. Yosemite was a big deal. California is a big deal. And she has I have pictures of her in her riding jodhpurs with her riding boots. And I remember as a little girl in her closet where they were the short lady riding boots. Mm-hmm. And then she had the regular riding boots from Miller's back in the day. Miller's was, I don't know, the black riding boots with the tan tops. This is a horseback woman and driving a car. This is an amazing woman. Mm-hmm. There is a picture of her and my father. He's on a horse in Central Park on their honeymoon. Hmm. My uncle kept a horse in Brooklyn at, I don't know.
Seriously, they weren't raised with it, but it came through something.
They got into horses. Yeah. My uncle owned a horse that he kept in Brooklyn. My father was a Connecticut farm boy, so naturally he rode horses, motorcycles through outhouses. That's what he would do for fun, take his motorcycle and ride through an outhouse. But there's this mother, so you can imagine the marriage of a Connecticut farm boy, very handsome fellow, and my beautiful mother, educated, sophisticated, all of that good stuff. The marriage, of course, was a mess. But anyway... That was just terrible. And then he came back from World War II, not wrapped too tight, but a lot of people didn't, so there you go. So anyway, so here, and now my uncle, my mother rides, my father rides. My brother is a rider, and I love to horseback ride.
Oh, I didn't know that about you.
I used to go up to a dude ranch almost every weekend back in the day, upstate New York in Rhinebeck. And had the most wonderful times of my life horseback riding, because there is something about just when it works, it's nothing better than that. We would go out early in the morning in the summertime for ladies' rides before it got too hot. And it would be beautiful. We'd tie the horses up and we'd futz around, the girls and I. And we'd go back and have lunch. And then late in the afternoon, you'd go back out again. But once I got into galloping, I never wanted to stop.
Oh, my goodness. So you got more from Grandpa than the urn. You got...
We all got the horse gene from Grandpa. So there's my mother, her brother, my brother, myself.
Yes.
So, and so my brother does is, I call the spit in the cup genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes into our ancestry. Pretty much Mongol.
Oh, well, that's important for horses.
That's very important for horses because here we have a fascinating statistic. We're not really Mongol. We're on the borderline. Mongols got everywhere.
That's right.
So did the Vikings. And I didn't know this. The Vikings also got into Russia. So now so you have a genealogy where horses, of course, are part of your
mm-hmm.
ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
So Temujin, who is with the name of King Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan had hundreds of wives. Then you have to add in all the rape, pillage, and plunder.
And hanky pank.
Well, that's rape, pillage, and plunder.
Hanky pank on one side, yes.
And risky hooey, as we used to say on the other.
Oh, I see. So this
so
is
now
why
one third
so many,
of the world, uh-huh. one third of the world's population today carries the gene from Genghis Khan, which I find absolutely fascinating.
Yes.
So there you have it. Because when I was a teenager, if you looked at me, you'd go, well, she looks a little Asian.
Oh, you see that a lot, of course. Yes.
And, you have the Russian Asian.
Right. You see that a lot.
Slanted.
Yes.
You have that kind of like a little slanted eye in a lot of
And those beautiful high cheekbones. I know you see that a lot among that area of Russian Jews.
Right. As you get that. Because if you read a book called The History of the Jews by Max Diamond, you will get the most fascinating theory. Why do Jews have blue eyes and blonde hair? One would think we would be Semitic and we would all have dark hair and dark eyes and we would all look like they do in the Levant, in that area of the world. But we are a real mix. But the big mix comes from Khan, K-H-A-N, spelt the same way as Genghis Khan. Mm-hmm. There was a Khan who was a leader, who was a very intelligent man, and he was interested in religions. He said, let me look at the three religions. So he looked at Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, and he chose Judaism. And therefore, he converted his entire population to Judaism, and that's where we might get our roots from.
The blue-eyed population.
The Middle European Jew. The Middle European Jew as distinct from the Israeli Jew from...
Well, there are also the black Ethiopian Jews. I mean,
yes, all flavors. There's a wonderful name for them. I forgot what the
Falasha.
Name. That's right.
Yes.
My mother was very, very interested in that tribe.
That whole thing is
the lost tribe. They claim to be the lost tribe.
That whole thing is so fascinating. Everything's fascinating.
It is.
Get back to the samovar.
Oh, so
where are we now? So in the store, what happened when you saw that?
So I showed my brother. I sent my brother some pictures of the samovars. We got talking about the samovars. We got talking about my grandfather. I got interested in looking up everything on the internet I could on the Crimean horse guards and the Tsar of Russia. Then I get into the assassination of the Tsar of Russia. Now we get into something really interesting.
Okay.
But I won't go there.
Oh.
But that's another time.
The
assassination of the Tsar of Russia, if you're interested, there are 9 million things written about that assassination.
Sure.
But there's some that are really fascinating.
I'm waiting to hear that you are Anastasia, but go ahead.
Please. So, her bones, that the whole thing. But anyway, so now we go off to, it's kind of like the thing when you talk about things and then things happen.
Okay.
So this is where I really would like to go, because I believe that thoughts become things.
Yes, they talk about just putting it out there.
Putting it out there, whatever it is, if you believe and you have faith and you put your emotion into it, it's going to occur. That's how the universe works. So, my brother and I are talking about it, but I'm visualizing samovar and lamp. And I keep thinking about, how these are just lovely, beautiful brass urns, but they don't have a spigot. They don't have the kettle holder on top. They don't have they're not samovars. They're just big, beautiful gold, brass urn. A week later, I'm moseying around the shop in the morning, as I love to do, because every morning in that shop is like Christmas. Mm-hmm. Because it's consignment, after 3 months, your goods leave and new goods come back. So there's always a rolling inventory coming into the shop. So I go in every morning, I'll go, oh, look what just came in. Mm-hmm. Well, all of a sudden, what do I see? It's not, but you know, 7 years you're waiting there. What do I see but a samovar, a real one, with a black shade on it, with a spigot on it. And it is beautiful, and it's small. Now, this may not be an original. I doubt if it's an original samovar. It's in exquisite condition. It's very delicate and small, most samovars. If you look up samovars, you will find the variety of samovars, including just exquisite, some almost Victorian looking. So there is a great variety in samovars. And in Judaica, there's a Judaica store online where they have a lot of samovars. They're still in, they're not in production, but they're
in circulation.
They're in circulation. There's quite a number of them. And some of them, they range from about $200 to about $1,500, depending on the condition and the age, where they came from.
So what about the one in the store, though? Where is that now?
So the one in the store is still in the store, and I, if I had room, my apartment is small, if I had room for it, I would buy it in a heartbeat, because I really love it. It's very feminine looking. It's just lovely. I'll send you a shot of it. It's just a very pretty piece, and it's very appealing. But there's so many other things in the store that are rolling around that I would love to have. So I go in there, and I say to myself, lottery, and then I point, yes, 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 yes. You know, I'd have to have somebody follow me. I just love that story. I'm very fortunate, because also there is a magic story of how I got the job.
Oh, yes, I'd like to hear that. And then I want to ask you, is there not some little thing in your apartment you can get rid of and replace
it? Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, that's a thought. I've got a couple of lamps I've had for quite a number of years that probably could be replaced.
Oh, because you love this thing so much. Yeah. It seems to just lift your soul.
It does. Yeah. And what I would love to do is probably, my lamps are also, they're sellable. They're like amphoras, like big, but they're white, like white, rough.
Yes.
You know, like stucco.
Yes.
They're big. They're round belly. They're like ginger jars.
Okay.
But they're made with white stucco with, lovely white shape. They're sellable.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea. Thank you for that.
Yeah, sure.
I can bring those lamps in and haul in a couple that I really have my eye on, including that lovely samovar.
Perfect. Okay. So how you got this job, and then I want to talk about a love letter.
Okay. So here's a job. Friends of mine know, now, prior to getting this job, I would be in leftovers probably once every other week, just walking around, taking pictures of things I like, making my wish list. A friend of mine one day, we're on the bus, and he says, oh, look, there's a sign. He's got better eyes than I do. There's a sign in leftovers. We're just passing it. We're stopped right there. So there's a sign that says, help wanted. Well, I don't run off the bus and rush in. I wait, and then the sign goes away. And I'm in there. I'm in the store. And I walk over to the desk, and I see this very nice man, and I said, by the way, there was a sign that said help wanted. I love this store. I always love this store. I remember when this store, when it first opened, it was on Polk Street. And I said, just curious, what was the job? He said, well, it's open. I said, what? He said, it's taking care of the animals. You know, the four cats and the birds are, taking care of the back room and sweeping up in the front, on the sidewalk, and that's the job. I said, oh my God, I want it. So I gave him my information, and I have an elderly cat who has diabetes, so I'm familiar with taking care of cats. And I give my cat.
Not to mention the horse genes, so taking care of animals anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And I had my little Yorkie for a very long time, 15 and a half years I've had. And Tut Tut is named after the pharaoh. King Tutankhamun, because the Egyptians revered and worshipped animals. And Gandhi said the measure of a civilization is how they treat their animals. And the Egyptian civilization was quite a civilization. So we have now, I said to the man, here's my name, here's my phone number. I love the store, I love animals. And I know Birdie, the three-legged chap. I know him since the store first opened. I get a call the next day from Kelly, who's the owner of Leftovers, And she said to me, "Can you come in tomorrow, which is a Sunday?" And she said, "I'd like to train you." Mm-hmm. So Michael, the man that I spoke to, is the manager of the store, unbeknownst to me. Very, very lovely chap. So I went in, and right away she trains me, and I started the next day.
That's great.
And that was back in April.
That's wonderful. I have a question.
Yeah.
You're talking about how energy mm-hmm. is everywhere and in everything.
Right, right.
And it seems to me that in terms of just energy, you have been led somehow back to this place,
oh, yes.
to the urn, uh-huh. to your grandfather,
right.
to
right.
your own heritage, to your mm-hmm. own cellular self somehow.
Right, right.
Where's the love letter? Because I've got an idea, but I don't like to be the love letter police. If you were to write a love letter right now, which I'm hoping you go home and do, what would it be? Because I have a thought.
Now, that's something that I do have to think about.
Okay. Can I just tell you what is striking me?
Yeah.
Just historically, what about a love letter to your grandfather and catch him up with this journey in your own handwriting?
Oh, that's a great idea.
And just everything you've talked about, what you remember and what you've come to know about your family, and don't leave out, you know,
right.
Genghis Khan.
Oh, well.
Just yeah, all of it.
Yeah. Uncle Genghis. Yeah.
Uncle Genghis. That's right. Grandpa Genghis.
Yeah.
Just what you have been fortunate enough to learn through following this
their journey,
trail of the urn.
Their journey is what is interesting. But unfortunately, my Uncle Ben, who passed away at 102, I never sat with him. You know, it's that wonderful, there's that line, "I never sang for my
mm-hmm,
father."
Mm-hmm.
I never sat with my Uncle Ben, who had the family history. So everybody, he died at 102. My mother and her sister both died, different years, of course, at 93. And the baby of the family died at 90. So we have this lovely longevity gene.
Well, and I don't know how much of this is written down, but what if you did a series and did them really as love letters? Dear Uncle Ben.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm so sorry I never got to sit down with
right.
you, but I've been thinking about you, and here's
right.
what... And
right.
to say
yeah.
to Grandpa Lucas.
Right. But we want to hear a love...
And then, wait, and then keep mail them to yourself.
Right. Yes.
And then they'll be found someday by someone.
But here's the love story in my family.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. My grandparents celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. I was probably about 7 or 8, thereabout. And my grandfather was a very jealous, he was an autocratic man. But my grandmother was no shrinking violet. She was president of her local Hadassah. She sat in a little school chair learning English because she wanted to learn American, she wanted to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
I remember her saying to me, her great curse word was, this is the worst thing she could ever say to anybody, was, "Shut up." And I was dating a man. I don't know how this ever happened, or maybe it was somebody in the family, but she said the greatest line. She'd say, "My darling, that boy is not 100%, which I love.
Okay, so
the love story.
Mm-hmm.
Theirs was a long marriage. They had 4 children. One passed away, so they actually had 5. They had the journey. They had their work. And my grandfather passes away shortly after their 50th wedding anniversary. A gentleman from the community comes to see my grandmother, and he says, "I will come back in a year, and I will court you in a
oh.
year." And after the year of my grandfather's death, she was out of mourning.
Mm-hmm.
3 months later, they were married, and she wrote my mother a letter.
Oh, you have it?
Well, I don't know where it is. If my mother, mm-hmm. you know, with my brother might have it with my mother's mm-hmm. things. She said, "These have been the happiest 3 months of my
Aww.
Life." That is the love story of a marriage. He admired her from afar for many, many years. And when it time came time, so she died a very happy married
That is
woman.
Wonderful. But you can see then the importance of writing down.
Right.
It's because
That's
of this love letter
right.
that you know this.
Uh-huh.
So I think historically important love letters are just that.
I
historically
agree. Absolutely.
Important. And it is such an act of love to catch up somebody who's long gone with what life is now.
That's a very interesting premise. I like that.
Okay. I hope you'll do that.
I will.
Thank you for coming to tell the
story.
Oh,
my pleasure.
So
absolutely.
Next time you come back, it'll be you were going to talk about something else, but I can't wait for you to come back and tell that story because I think you're just great. No, thank you, dear, for doing this.
I think you're great, too.
Well, until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every love letter you write is a special occasion. Thank you. Bye-bye. That's